welcome to another edition of Kaleidoscope. This is Magda Zenon recording from downtown in Nicosia. And with me, all the way from Gorica in Slovenia, is Anja Medved. Hi, Anja, and welcome.
Hello, Magda. Nice to see you again.
Lovely to see you too. Anja and I met through a project that is been implemented for the past 10 years by the Mission of Kosovo under the auspices of the Organization for Security and Cooperation of Europe. It's a dialogue academy for young women. I think we were both inspired, both Anja and I were inspired to speak with young women. It reminds us that we are young. It reminds us that there is hope for now and tomorrow. But one of the reasons this academy was so inspiring to me was the location. And that is what Anja will be talking to us about, because Gorica or Nova Gorica has a very specific history, and especially for the Cypriot listeners, something quite almost familiar. So I will take it from there, because Anja is a documentary maker. That's her hat, but a documentary maker that focuses on cross-border memories. So let's start at the beginning, because I've given a lot of information. Do you want to give the listeners, tell them a little bit about Gorica and Nova Gorica, its unique history?
Well, I will talk, as you said, from a point of view of a documentarist. I'm not a historian. So, and also in my documentaries, what I'm curious about, it's not history or historiography, but family memories, memories of people that lived the everyday life and had to deal with the huge history entering in their lives. And that history in this region was quite extreme. It started after a very nice beginning, actually. The beginning of 20th century was quite prosperous. There was a culturally and socially quite rich and interesting small town, Austro-Hungarian town. And soon after that, First War started, and the huge disaster of Isonzo Front went right by this town and completely destroyed the landscape. I mean, it was so huge that villages were leveled, and even trees were not growing anymore because the soil was so destroyed and bombarded that there was no organic.
It had become toxic.
Yes, and from then on things went just down and down. After First World War, fascism came, Italy, German, Austrian population almost vanished. Slovenian language was prohibited to speak in public. And all this culminated into the Second World War. We know how things ended there, but also after Second World War and liberation, this history was not the same for all, because Italian population was suffering the revenge of population of, let's say, Yugoslavian Tito army. So it's a big mess, very complex history, because we have not only nationalities and ideologies, languages that were living and coexisting in this place for centuries. They had to kind of decide on what side to be.
Because what was actually happening in the area is that the border kept on changing. Artificial borders were there were borders in place. Then after the Second World War, the borders changed again. And then after the EU, the borders changed again. And then the Schengen area and the borders changed again. So the borders were very fluid, which means inhabitants or residents of places could be quite confusing.
Of course. And
And it caused for a lot of mobility. A lot of people kept on needing to move or being forced to move.
Of course. For example, just to have an idea, my grandmother was born in one house and he were living since 95. So she had quite a long life. And without moving out of this house where she was born, she changed 5 countries. So
that's perfectly put.
Yes.
That's perfectly put.
So the question is who she identified with? What was her country? Of course, she was Slovene. She was speaking Slovene. She was feeling very much in touch with the Slovenity. And she was proud to speak her own language. But in this mess and changing chaos, I think people were learning to adapt. You know, they kind of had the skill to understanding that, okay, my grandma would say, I don't know if I would know how to translate it in English, but she would say that the bowl is the same, just the pigs are changing, you know.
But it does get confusing because if you look at the last change, which was Slovenia joining the Schengen area of the EU, previously the border between Italy and Slovenia were separated by the Schengen area, which is a problem we have in Cyprus. When suddenly Slovenia became part of that Schengen area, suddenly there was no border. Mm-hmm. So these movements that to a lot of people seem they're beyond the scope of their thought process is actually quite serious in the sense that people are displaced, memories are moved around. I mean, we were in Nova Gorica, which is Slovenia, but Nova Gorica is under the auspices of the Italian government.
Nova Gorica?
Is it not?
No. No, no. Nova Gorica is Slovenia. It used to be Yugoslavia. Mm-hmm. After 1991, with independence, Slovene independence, it became Slovenia. And we know the history, the terrible history that happened afterwards in Yugoslavia. Yes. This border was it's still there. I mean, there is still a border between Slovenia and Italy. But as we are all part of European community, this border is not physical anymore. The fences were removed. What was a big challenge for me and for even for the generation of my parents, because the border was established in 1947. So, for example, my grandma, she grew up in Gorizia because Gorizia, Italian, on Italian mm-hmm. side, was the only town at that time. Nova Gorica was not there. There was just a field and an old factory and a huge cemetery. So, after Second World War, they decided to draw this white line that made the defined what is Yugoslav and what is Italian territory. There were still clashes about, so it was called temporary border, but in fact it remained and it's still there, the same that it was drawn on 47. Nova Gorica,
it just gets quite confusing because I landed in Ljubljana, that's Slovenia. I went past signs that said Italy. I went through the checkpoint that is no longer a checkpoint, and then I came up to Nova Gorica. So it gets, everything blends in. But let's get to the thing that is part of your heart. I think it's part of your soul, this cross-border memories. And it, the, one of the main products of your this work is smuggling, I keep on forgetting, the Smuggler's Confessional, which I found so eye-opening and warm. So tell us more about this project that you are doing with your mother.
Yes. With my mother, we started to make documentaries together. In 99 was the first film.
Nadia, what's your mother's name?
Yes, Nadia Velushchik.
She's an awesome woman who makes a wonderful Turkish Greek coffee.
Yes, and she is a great. She has a great nose for spotting stories and spotting people that have and want to tell the stories, because this territory is interesting because of this moving border. And when you have different realities of different perspective on the world at the same place, stories get complex and full of paradoxes, what makes them interesting.
So
the idea was the first was just her idea. She wanted to make a film about how this border was made, but not because she wanted to deal with the history, but because she really felt from her mother some kind of pain she had through all her life, because she was the only of four sisters that went to live in Yugoslavia. I mean, Yugoslavia just happened in front of her face, and by chance, the village where the man of her, when her love, my grandfather, was living, was by chance on the other side of the border. So she was feeling kind of excluded. She was missing her hometown. She went to live in the village. At the beginning, it was not possible to go back to her family and sisters. So this homesickness was present, even if she was not living so far away from her native place. So that was the reason that my mom was wanting to dive into this topic, because she was feeling that this story was not told. Because in Italy, we had an Italian history. In Yugoslavia, we had Yugoslavian history. But what about the border territory history? This is, it's unique. It has a unique character that we wanted to find.
And to be honest, without this, the history of the whole area is incomplete.
Exactly.
Because this history of this cross-border or moving border is a very important part of the history of the area.
Exactly. And even more of European community. I feel that border areas are the most European in a sense, because they summarize all the questions that the European community should answer: how to live together with so many differences. And here you have concrete, real material to work on. It's not only nice words.
I agree with you, because if you look at the Cyprus context, the people that live in the areas of our green line, our checkpoints, are very much aware of the interactions between the two communities, or the communities living on either side, are a lot more aware of the division and what the division does. Whereas the people in the outlying areas that are far from the checkpoints live in another world.
Exactly.
So to me, it's very, I believe I understand it more, the history, because the checkpoint is 200 meters from me. I can hear the Dzami on the other side. When the Dzami, the Hoxha, is saying his sermon, I can hear him from where I live. So to me, you have a greater understanding. The border people have a greater understanding of the complexities.
Of course. And they will always...
And the beauties.
Of course.
The complexities and the beauties. Not only that, it's not only a problem, it's wonderful as well.
Exactly. And that's why this project that you mentioned, the Smuggler's Confessionary, was made. Because after making all these films, I realized that archiving and recording interviews is maybe even more important than making films. So that night when Slovenia entered the Schengen area, it was almost like a small Berlin Wall going down in between Gorizia and Nova Gorica. So it was
20th of December 2007. So it was almost a Christmas present.
Yes, and it was very emotional. Everybody was in the streets. Everybody was taking or a wine or some cheese or something. It was really like a really like a party, town party. And that night, I invited people to come from Nova Gorica and Gorizia and to the ex-border hut, border checkpoint, that we got the permission to use. And to confess what they were smuggling. Everybody was smuggling, you know. But it was a joke in a way, because people was really, you know, they were also very smart how to invent different ways of smuggling. I mean, you have to understand that it was smuggling coffee, rice, washing powder. It wasn't real smuggling. And
I don't know if it was if you showed us or we were invited to the university and someone showed us, there was a photograph of someone that smuggled schnapps and he put white liquid around the schnapps, put on top of the schnapps, the funnel that the schnapps could, a little bit of milk.
Yes, Yes.
To me, that was absolute. It was the most ingenious thing I've ever seen in my life. Because when they asked him to fill in the listeners, when they asked him what he was smuggling, he said, "I'm not smuggling. It's milk. And if you open the cap, you smell milk, and you can see it's white and it's milk, and outside it's milk." And then he craftily took it off to show us, and there was this wonderful bottle of schnapps.
Yes, exactly. And there were many of these kind of geniuses of smuggling.
Absolutely.
So, yes. But this was one part of intention to get all these stories. But there was also, I think it was even almost like a cathartic moment in this night, because we were really living, I mean, this border was becoming part of our bodies, our organisms. It was You were not aware how much anxiety you were having in your body, just because you were living here and you had to think, you know, if you are crossing, what is in your trunk, what is in your pocket, and so on. But so it was in a way like celebration and a funny moment, but it was also cathartic moment of wanting to get out of this anxiety.
Did people go to the confessional very easily?
Well, that night it was very easy because everybody was remembering border stories, and there were every person living in the border area has at least one funny or terrible border story. So that night was in the air. But because it was so great, I mean, I had people were waiting in the line. I interviewed for like 8 hours of footage. But that's why I continued with this project. And every second year, I organized a similar situation, but not but with a different topic, for example, but always connected to these two, to the memories of these two towns that are standing on the same space, practically. So I invited to bring me photos from the family albums and tell me the story, that were photos that were took in Gorizia or Nova Gorica, and tell me what is going on the photo. So I get all these stories that probably it would be difficult to find otherwise.
Okay. Tell me, you obviously, what is it? No, let me rephrase it. You have also connected with other cultural centers within the area to help you and support the work that you've done, because you only haven't only done it in Gorica. Or have you only done it in Gorica? Have you got support from other communities?
Mostly, I was working in this border area. Of course, also not in other places. In Topolovo, for example, it's a small village more north, also at the border. So I also there made this confessionary, because there are many stories on the border that are interesting. Although there the border is a little bit different than in Gorizia. But I also did something similar in Ljubljana, just because it was a way to try to make something similar in Ljubljana, remembering Second World War. But it's different when you work on the border. For me, the real sense of making these confessionaries is border. So, yeah.
I agree with you, because if we talk about Cyprus and its history, it's very different if I'm in Nicosia and talking about it, and you've got the checkpoints and the barbed wire next to you, and it's very different sitting on the beach in the south and talking about it. It definitely has a different essence. But all your work has been surrounded around memories.
Well, almost all, yes. I studied theater directing in Academy in Ljubljana. But then this collaboration happened with my mom, and it was, we started together, really. She wasn't making documentaries before. She was teaching as a teacher of Slovene in Italy and Italian. She was teaching Italian in Nova Gorica. So she was really living this space
perfectly
in balance. And she was missing the connection. So I kind of, after this academy, I was dragged into this project. But soon I realized how interesting and how important, but at the same time, not researched enough territory I am entering, even if it was my hometown. So after, we started to make this. Yeah, I mean, we made maybe 16 documentaries about memory. Of course, always looking for memories that are not confirming what are the national histories, but looking for memories that are a little bit shaking the ground we think we stand on, so trying to make visible the complexities, of course, and how identities are not something you are just simply born with, but are something that are building through the life and through our actions and
the
learning.
People we meet.
Of course.
I think the most important part of what the work that you're doing is that we all know governments create a narrative they want people to believe. And that narrative usually supports one side. And it usually says one, someone is wrong and someone is right. Mm-hmm. When you bring the human aspect into it, you will see that in conflict anyway, no one's right and no one's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is personal. Everything is a personal perspective. And that perspective is really important to creating the complete reality, because there is no one reality. The reality is quite a kaleidoscope, if I may use that word, because reality has got a lot of different things, because my reality is the context I live in, my family, my friends, my university. Your reality is behind a camera.
Mm.
I think when you bring in these stories, it makes us all realize that we can have questions.
Mm-hmm.
If we believe something different, it's not wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's my reality and I control my reality. And it also shows you how manipulative governments can be. When you listen to the narratives that they've been feeding us all,
mm-hmm.
you realize they've been trying to manipulate you into believing that they know better than you do, and no one knows better than you do.
Exactly.
Or at least you need to be part of that process.
Well, what is important is already to understand that there are different, how you say, that there is this kaleidoscope of realities. So it means how very difficult it is to understand each other. It's not something that it's easy. We should learn this, that it's not... it's something very challenging, and it's also something very beautiful that we try to, in this space between your vision and my vision, to try to find the connection.
Mm-hmm.
And to understand this is something it's precious.
It's very precious, because if you hear my truth and I hear your truth, we also don't need to fight anymore.
Yes.
Because if I really listen to you and you really listen to me, then we're both right.
Yes.
And we're both wrong.
Exactly. So this idea that we were kind of taught in school or in our states and histories that if you are not with us, you are against us, it's a very violent and not constructive way of communicating. It's very important that I understand your position and see your position, even if it's different than mine. But I can see the ground that you stand on, so I understand your view. And this is interesting also if we go back to the border, you know, the point of view, where if you are on one side or the other, it's sometimes just easy as that.
And I agree, because if I see you at the border and I actually see you, it's a lot easier to understand. And I agree with you, this narrative that they feed us puts you against me. And that's not the reality of the situation, because you and I can share the things we disagree on and the things that we share. So that's why it's a kaleidoscope, and everyone's right, everyone's wrong. There's no black and white. We share things and there are things we don't share, but we respect the fact that there are differences.
Yeah.
And there are similarities.
And on the other hand, we are also, we learned to be afraid of conflict. But conflict can be good or bad. There is a good conflict. It's called dialogue. This is when I understand your point of view, that it's different than me, but I still respect you and try to live with you.
Mm. And you're right, because if I learn to respect the fact that what we think is different, I will speak more, because I will be safe to speak more, which means there will be potentially less conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me, how easy was your transition from theater to documentary making?
Well, I was never really into classical theater. For me, theater was most of all like a space of experiment. So a space that you can represent and you can try different concepts and different ideas or different imaginations. It's really, it's a very concrete space that represents something that is imaginative. So going to documentaries was for me quite natural. It wasn't like completely different. It was just changing the tool of how you work. But for me, also in documentary filmmaking or in the editing room especially, it is also a space of experiment, of trying, of seeing how a story edited in a different way can mean something different. It's a lot connected to the storytelling and how we build stories and how we build our concepts.
Tell me, these documentaries that you've made around memory, and especially Smuggler's Confessional, where has it been shown? Has it been shown at schools?
Well, it was, it was shown in some festivals, but mostly in galleries. It was in contemporary art spaces. It was interesting. They found it, I wasn't really thinking what is going to be the public for this film. But at the end, it was presented in contemporary art context.
Tell me, did you get any negative reaction to it?
Not really. At that time, it was already the atmosphere. It was already much friendlier than it used to be. So there was this idea, and it was okay to understand and to. Yes, I still remember people that would live in Gorizia but never cross the border. You know, this was I remember this. But on the other hand, Nova Gorica and Gorizia, also in Yugoslavia, Yugoslavia was an aligned country, so it was trying to communicate. So these two cities, Gorica and Nova Gorica, had, for example, a beautiful event. It was cycling of friendship. I remember I was a young kid, 7 years old, and inhabitants of Nova Gorica and Gorica joined and went to a long circle around the two cities with the bikes, and at the end it was a huge picnic for everybody. And it's amazing that this was happening in era of so-called Iron Curtain.
It is amazing.
So it also says how it's really hard to, whatever you say in this region, it can be also the opposite true. Like, yes, this was also in a way part of Iron Curtain. Okay, looking that Yugoslavia was not really an Eastern Bloc, but still, people were dying on this border.
Yes, they were.
And at the same time, you had also cycling of friendship. So it's a complex territory and quite inspiring.
Is this project ongoing, or have you stepped away for it for a while?
Well, I kind of changed the house when we were shooting these interviews. Now it's a nice gallery, and I'm really happy about that. It's a small, really miniature cultural center. So when the spot changed, also the concept kind of changed, because of course the idea was also how to re-articulate the meaning of this buildings that were part of the border. So now we are still collecting and archiving memories. At the moment, especially on the Second World War, because there are not so many people now remembering this period. So we are working a lot, and also we are in post-production of a film that is collecting stories of children that remember Second World War. Of course, from the position of all the identities that were part of this town. And we know the Second World War was the reason why this territory was split with the border. So it's quite important project for me.
Well, I think you said the most important thing. These stories come from people, and people are dying. So unless you collect the stories now, the stories might not get heard.
Exactly.
So I think you're actually doing, this is a labor of love for you, but it's also a respect to the history of the space that needs to be recorded. I had an aunt, because she passed away about 8 years ago. She lived till 91. And she was a treasure trove of stories of the family, the area. And I used to listen to them, and I never recorded them. And I think to myself, why was I so arrogant to believe I would remember them? Or why did it just not occur to me to every time we had conversations? Because then I used to carry around a small recorder to do other interviews, but it didn't occur to me to just sit with my aunt and have her stories and record her stories, because she passed away and those stories have left.
Yeah.
No one else can replace those stories now.
It's very common what you're saying. Also, it happened even to me and my mom. I mean, my grandma, mom of my mom, I mean, we are also knocking our heads to the wall, you know, what we were thinking, you know. Mm. You know what we were thinking? That she's going to be eternal.
So yes. Yes. You're going to think, when I suddenly get the idea to do something, she's still going to be around.
Yes. So this is very, very common. And maybe also because of that, we are, you know, working on this. Also, you are working on storytelling and how to. But it's something that is very feminine also. It was always passed through the women side of families. And so it's something that we have this urge. We understand this urge to pass the stories.
I often believe I'm probably the same in your area, but this Greek coffee, the Turkish coffee, was something that women did together after they cleaned their house. All the women of the area would come together and drink their coffee and also tell fortunes.
Yes, okay. Yes.
I honestly believe that telling fortunes was a way of them telling personal stories without saying it's a personal story.
Yes.
So they do, a woman... It is more of a woman characteristic to actually sit together. Even when you embroider, they would embroider things on a piece of linen, and that embroidery would tell a story. It wouldn't just be crosses. Even the crosses would take a shape.
Yes.
I remember when my son was born, and I had an elderly woman living in the same building as me, and I had a lovely piece of linen, and I said to her, because there's, I don't know what it's called in English, where they cut out shapes and embroider around, and they make a pattern on the cushion and the sheet. And I said to her, I want you to do something. Will you do something for my son? And because my son's name is Angelo, and he was born on just before St. Irene's Day, which is Peace Day, she embroidered this lovely pigeon on the sheet and the cushion. That is, I mean, she told a story with this thing that she printed. It was definitely something that belonged to my son. The one part had an angel, and the other had the sign of peace. So to me, everything women do is a lot more three-dimensional than shooting a gun or drinking beer. They tell a lot more stories. I agree with you.
Yeah.
It tends to be more of a woman tend to be put more of a three-dimension into life.
Exactly.
Because we're coming to the end of this conversation, have you got any story?
A story?
A favorite story?
That's well, yes.
I mean, I know you've got a million stories that you've heard.
Okay, I tell you one from the last film. There was a, you know, our grandfathers were all serving Italian army in the Second World War, what is another paradox, of course. And this man was sent, as many others, to fight with Nazi, of course, with Nazis into Russia. They went to a village and they were, you know, they had horses because there was artillery, whatever. So this Russian man asked him, but how come you understand our language? And he said, well, I'm not Italian, I am Slovene. And the guy says, the Russian says, well, from where? And he was like, wow, what can I say to a man from Russian steppe? Where is my village in Slovenia? So he said, Trieste. Okay. And the Russian says, really? But I was near Trieste during the First World War because we were prisoners and we were making a street there. And he says, yeah, well, I'm also not really from Trieste, but from a village next by. Well, the story ends that the Russian guy was living in the house of his father.
Wow.
and he says they just looked to each other and embraced each other as if they were brothers. So it's still a goosebump story.
No, I can. I also am. And surprisingly enough, you told me the story told by a man. And not by a woman.
Well, yes. I mean, I must say.
No, I think it's good because men do have stories.
Yes.
I don't think they are encouraged to tell the stories. I think that's the problem.
Yes. And he probably told this story he couldn't say this story, of course, to his superiors. But when he went home, he was telling these stories. Of course, when he went home, he joined partisans and fought against fascists and Nazis. But this is the paradox of history. And it was difficult for this man to even talk because it's hard to understand. And many people couldn't understand that our grandfathers, who were partisans before becoming partisans, were in the fighting with Germans. Mm.
And I think that's why stories need to be told, because it's like a piece of material that a million pieces of strands of cotton or linen, and they woven together, and they're actually separate, but they're not separate. So that's a lovely story. I like that story. And there are millions more like that. I need to put you in contact with a lovely friend of mine, a local friend of mine, who's a filmmaker. So I need to connect you because I think maybe she could get a few ideas from you, or you could get a few ideas from her.
Thank you.
Because, okay. But I think we could talk for hours because, I like listening to stories. I like listening to stories. So I thank you.
Thank you
for coming on this podcast, because as we both know, without weaving these stories, our history is very one-dimensional. And it divides and it doesn't unite, whereas the stories unite.
Exactly.
Is there something you want to say before I say goodbye? We say goodbye to the listeners.
No, I'm really happy that we met. It was great to have this meeting of young women that are also working to cross the obstacles that border makes, and to see borders also like something that can be a place of quality in a way. So it was a pleasure to be part of this project and to, of course, to talk to you. And I really hope that we can stay in touch and be informed about other storytelling projects.
Yes, I would love to stay in touch because, as I tell people, in my previous life, I was a documentary maker. And then they remind me that I might not have documentaries, but I have podcasts. But I like the visual. I like the visual. So, yes, please let's stay in touch. And I will give your contact details to my friend with your permission.
Thank you.
And let's keep on telling stories to make sure that the history that goes forward is multidimensional and not divisive and separate and keeping people apart.
It's very, very important to tell this a lot in these times. It's incredible that we are going backwards still in this.
Yes, it is. I can't understand how we keep and we'll take two steps forward and then three steps back. And it is. So I agree with you. We need to keep on telling the stories.
Yes.
And thank you very much. And my love to your mother.
Thank you.
And we will definitely stay in touch. And to the listeners, stay safe and also stay kind and keep on telling and listening to stories.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Magda.
The first trilingual podcast station of Cyprus, Island Talks, open, diverse, free.